This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Liverpool Blood Red Podcast with me, Ian Doyle. Joining me today, I'm delighted to say once again, we have our full-time Liverpool correspondent, both home and away, James Pearce. Hi, Jay.
Hello, Ian.
How are you?
Very good, thank you. Yeah,
excellent.
The heartbeat has just about returned to normal.
Well, how old are you now? Nearly 50? You've got to be careful, haven't you?
41, Ian.
Yes, yes.
Also, be younger than you.
Yes, only by a couple of years, though. Also with us is Joe Rimmer. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Ian.
And also we have the most easterly member of the sports desk, Connor Dunn.
Hello. Hi, Ian. I'm also considerably younger than you.
That is fine. However, you've been on holiday, haven't you?
I have.
Did you have a nice time?
I did, and I've got a terrible tan.
A terrible tan? Have you hurt your shoulder as well?
I have indeed.
How did you do that?
I fell over at about 40 miles an hour on skis.
Well, that's okay then. Now, James, you and myself were at Anfield yesterday. We watched Liverpool beat Tottenham, which is always good fun. But especially when Tottenham decided to give Liverpool the victory by throwing the ball against one of their own players and then knocking it over the line. Were Liverpool a little bit fortunate, not just with that goal, but just to get the win in the end?
Oh, yeah. You'd have to say massively lucky. I mean, you could spend all day, couldn't you, picking holes in the performance, because I thought Liverpool started really sloppily, then had a really good spell just after they scored the opening goal, threatened to blow Tottenham away, didn't, and then again slackened off, let Tottenham back into it. And then second half, I thought Liverpool were a distant second best, and you know, once more equalised, Tottenham looked the more likely winners, and you know, hearts were in mouths, obviously, when Sissoko went through, the Dele Alli chance as well that was curled just wide, and yeah, the game was so frantic and stretched, and it was, you know, I must admit, I wasn't sat there thinking that Liverpool were going to grab a late winner, but you know, that made it all the sweeter, the fact that out of nowhere, they produced that in the dying seconds with a massive helping hand from Hugo Lloris, who made, we've seen a few blunders at Anfield this season from keepers, haven't we, that have helped Liverpool's title challenge. And
is there some kind of voodoo going on there, do you think?
Well, it's been at the same end as well, hasn't it? With Pickford, and you think of Spironi as well for Palace. You know, absolute horrendous basic mistakes that have been absolutely huge. You know, you think the point swing in those three moments.
Morris's,
you know,
penalty as well.
So, yeah, although he's not a goalkeeper.
And also it wasn't at the cop end.
About that end, the voodoo.
Is it the
wrong end?
Yeah.
Other than what? Yeah. We'll forget about that.
Should we start again?
No. Anyway, James, you were saying.
How's your shoulder?
It wasn't your head that got hurt.
Those three moments in themselves, without them, the title race would effectively be over, wouldn't it? It was, you know, again, I don't think you'd have to say luck played a part, but I think you've also got to factor in, it's happened too often this season that Liverpool have found a way to win late on in games, that it's not just coincidence. You know, it comes down to fitness. I think it comes down to the spirit in the team as well. The fact that they don't give up, even when they're not playing well, they keep going and going. And Sunday was the perfect example of that.
Joe, I believe that you caused some grievous harm to a piece of technological equipment when the winning goal went over the line.
I don't know whether anyone noticed that our live blog didn't have the winning goal in it for a little while. Because I managed to jump on Ghosty and pull the cable out from his laptop.
I'm assuming Ghosty was sat down at the time, given he was the tallest member of the sports desk. Yeah,
And the cable came out and the whole thing died. So we were desperately, frantically trying to get
absolutely
get
professional.
Back online.
I was going to ask James, by the way. James, when the winning goal went in, you didn't really do any kind of your normal reaction, did you really? It was very odd, because when the first one went in, you hit me, as normally happens.
Yeah.
But then when the second one went in, there wasn't really much.
It just seemed all a bit surreal, to be honest, because I was struggling to take in that the ball, how has that even happened? Because you see the cross come in, you think Salah's in, then you think the angle's got too tight, he's not going to score from there. And then the header is effectively straight at Hugo Lloris. And once you see him behind it, you think, well, there is no chance there. Then suddenly the ball's dribbling over the line. I think I was just a bit slow on the uptake, to be honest, in terms of what on earth has happened there, and struggling to take it in, because, like I said, it came out of nowhere. I must admit, I'd pretty much given up hope of Liverpool winning that game.
Hang on a minute. So this is a rare moment of James Pearce non-positivity?
Well, only because there was nothing to suggest in that second half really Liverpool were going to win it.
Well, they were playing Tottenham, don't forget. We shall come to that a little bit later on. Now, Joe, you
I think that's what contributed to my silly celebration, though, is because I, like James, pretty much given up on Liverpool winning it. I thought the game was just petering out, and then that happened. And I was kind of, when it came to Salah, sort of on my feet, and then on Gorsi's shoulders. So
there's also a lot of things that needed to happen for that to go in, like Olivero kicking the floor kicking the ball and kicking the air. It was all just mad.
It was good.
Slow motion pandemonium.
It was Tottenham though, wasn't it? So
it was Tottenham, yeah.
What do we expect? I must admit that if the game had finished 1-1, I believe that would have been a good point for Liverpool because they did not play well. It's like the game against Leicester. Leicester, everyone was saying Liverpool dropped points there, but in the context of that actual game earlier this season, Liverpool were not good in the second half and did well to get a point out of that. So for them to get the win, it's the kind of thing where, I'm not saying title challenges turn on this kind of thing, but that could have such a huge impact for the remaining weeks, because if Liverpool don't win that game, suddenly everybody's asking questions. And while they might still be asking questions today, like we're going to ask questions in this podcast, Liverpool have got the points. They're on the board. They're there. They've got 79 points, which is the same amount that they had when they last won the league at the end of the season. They've never had this many points at this stage of a season ever in the top flight. So there isn't really much else, Joe, that they can actually be doing, is there?
It's quite remarkable. I mean, losing one game all season so far, and you know, to think that they might not end up with the title, it'd be such a shame, wouldn't it? But the flip side of it, City must be thinking, what the hell do we have to do to shake them off? And you know, every time City, what, won 11 out of 12 games? They're on an incredible run themselves, and Liverpool won't go away. And all right, yeah, we can talk about luck, but I think good teams are lucky teams, aren't they? You know, how often were Man United lucky? And that's because they were a good side. Chelsea used to get quite a bit of luck. They were a great side. So, you know, I think you can only say so much of that towards Liverpool, because they put so much pressure on teams, and even late in the games, they're putting balls into dangerous areas. And you know, it all comes from a Trent ball that finds Salah at the back post in a dangerous area, caused chaos for Tottenham. So I think, yeah, they were lucky, but they make their own luck. And you were saying that would have been a good point. I don't think at this stage of the season, I think in any other season, yeah, it would have been a good point. But right now,
I think at this stage of the season, if you're not playing well and you're getting a point out of that, I think that's a good result.
But I think with the pace that City set, City would have gone four points ahead, wouldn't they, if Liverpool had dropped 2 points yesterday, if they win on Wednesday, am I right?
This game and the next two.
They'd have gone 4 points
if
ahead.
If they'd have lost, ahead. It would have been top on goal difference.
Well, okay, three points ahead, yeah. So, you know, it's quite a lot, considering you don't expect City to lose or draw many games, do you?
But this game and the next two are so crucial to Liverpool, because this is their tough period during the running, because they obviously they've got Tottenham, Southampton away, which will be difficult, which I'm sure we'll come on to later this week. And then they've got Chelsea at home, which historically hasn't been a great game for them.
They'll sack Sarri, won't they, a minute before that game, and Mourinho will arrive.
Wednesday before the game.
But then it's after that City have got their tough games. Tottenham, which you'd like to think Tottenham will put up a good game against City. I know they've got the Champions League quarterfinal as well, and they will be pushing for that fourth. But in fact, that's why that result yesterday was so important for Liverpool, because now it means that Tottenham have no free hits between now and the end of the season. They've got to go for every game, and the City game is
keep having to go for it, aren't they?
Those two games are far enough away from the end of the season to have something on them, regardless of what happens between now and then, I think. So that's why this was a big result for Liverpool. And if they get, I know, I think we said at the podcast, I think if they get 7 points from that game and the next two, I thought they'd be in a great position, but now they can get 9.
They can.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think if they get through the next three, having won all three games, I don't say it would break City's will, but I'm sure City would then start feeling the pressure. There's been a lot of pressure on Liverpool, and a lot of talk of Liverpool. I mean, it's total rubbish. I was going to say something else then, but it's total rubbish, but Liverpool bottling it. But I think that the pressure would then flip onto City. If they can get through these next three games with 9 points, it would be massive, massive.
Yeah, that's a body blow for City, that goal yesterday.
Yeah.
Because, you know, can you imagine Pep Guardiola and his staff and his players watching that? And, you know, they'd have been watching that second half thinking Liverpool are going to lose it. And then, you know, with a minute or two to go, they'd be thinking, do you know what? Oh God, I can't believe Liverpool are somehow getting away with a point from a game they should probably lose. Then out of nowhere, that goal happens. And I think, psychologically, that's a massive. I reckon that does more for Liverpool and hurt City more than if Liverpool had gone and beaten Tottenham 4-0 on Sunday.
Is this the first game this season in the Premier League that Liverpool have won while not deserving to win? I think it is. I can't think of any others where they couldn't argue that they deserve to win.
Maybe Everton at home. Liverpool weren't great against Everton, were they?
Second half they were better. They were putting the pressure on in the second half of that game. I think you could argue either way for that one.
In this game that Liverpool were that poor, I think you forget that after they scored, they went very close to making it 2.
Yeah, with Trent.
Well, it's Trent. If the game happens the other way around. If the game, the first half, the second half, then everyone will be going, oh, well, Liverpool have done well there. But
exactly.
I think it's more because this season we've been talking about how well Liverpool have controlled games, haven't they?
And they did have half an hour.
And they did not control that game in the second half. They were all over the shop, you know, especially in the thought midfield wise. They lost their way. They left themselves wide open as well. In match of the day, too, some analysis, you know, looking at. You know, some of those Tottenham breakaways, the Sissoko chance, it's crazy, isn't it? It comes from a Liverpool attack and suddenly it's 2-on-1 on Van Dijk, which is the absolute opposite of what we talked about all season in terms of the protection and the discipline and organisation being so good. But don't you think
that comes from the pressure, Liverpool thinking, we have to win now, we have to win these games. So they're overcommitting forward and leaving themselves exposed. Yeah. And City might do that eventually.
Yeah, and I think that's just because the difference between winning and drawing that game is absolutely vast. Because Liverpool would have been level on points with City, wouldn't they? Having played a game more and an inferior goal difference. So effectively, for City, they could have looked at it and gone, well, we can now afford to lose one game and win the rest.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that would be I know they've got some tricky games left, but that is a hell of a position to be in for a team as good as them. Now suddenly they're in a position where they can't afford to there is no margin for error for City. And yeah, I think that felt like there's been a lot of big moments in this title race, but that felt by far the biggest so far.
Now, one thing that wasn't lucky was the miss by Sissoko, Connor. Okay, Sissoko didn't do a particularly good shot, but it was all about Van Dijk, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you cannot literally speak about the qualities of Van Dijk enough, and the amount of times that he has defended so superbly for Liverpool is just pretty much uncountable. But that is absolutely textbook defending. It is knowing exactly who you're up against. It is knowing the fact that Son has got more of a chance of scoring than Sissoko has, blocking that path off. At first, it looked like quite strange defending, doing in the middle, but it was superb at the end. And as soon as Sissoko took that on, and before Sissoko knew it, Van Dijk was there and he's closed him down, the pass was off, the shot was over, and yeah, it was perfect, really.
You could tell, Joe, all the way through that breakaway that Sissoko was absolutely desperate. And Van Dijk got onto that straight away and was like, I'm just going to stay here and just see what happens.
Exactly.
So you don't need to make a tackle, score a goal, you know, great pass, assist, whatever. That was just a guy stood in the right place.
Absolutely. And it was just about buying time, wasn't it? He knew that, stay there, make sure he can't pass it. And
How long did it feel though when he was going through?
But it was, he just made Sissoko make a decision, didn't he? And he made the wrong one. So it was brilliant defending. There's a few people in this office that perhaps don't support Liverpool who are saying, well, it's just a bad miss. But it's about making him miss making a simple chance more difficult, isn't it?
It's just having the peace of mind in a pressure situation like that to actually have the thought process to go through. And you know, I don't know how he does it.
We've all played football to some level. Well, I was going to say defensively, Jane, so that you're not included in this. But there's always been a time where it's 2-on-1 and everybody would just go to the ball, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Everyone just goes to the ball.
I mean, Van Dijk would have looked quite silly, wouldn't he, if Sissoko was absolutely nailed that into the bottom corner.
Yeah.
But what he did was, in his head, he weighed it up and thought, well, I can see for a start that Sissoko doesn't want to shoot. He's desperately looking for the pass. And Son, with the quality he's got finishing-wise, is much more likely to score than Sissoko. So he gambled and said, okay, you know, do you know what? I'm not giving you that pass option. You're going to have to take the shot on yourself.
I saw somebody else said he'd managed to make, just through his positioning, he made a 90-10 probability into a 50-50, which if you're 50-50 with clean through on goal, that's quite good odds, isn't it?
Yeah.
He just lost his head to Sissoko, didn't he? Because he ended up having a bad touch that then took it onto his left. And then he just... But yeah, you could just tell from the body language, couldn't you, that the last thing he wanted to do was take the responsibility there. Van Dijk sensed it, was so alert to it, and was proved right. And that's what sets him apart from any other top flight defender.
Well, Mauricio Pochettino said the same thing to Sky afterwards. He said that's why Liverpool paid 75 million for him.
Yep, exactly that. You know, he's been Liverpool's most influential player this season, and he's done it, like Connor said, he's done it time and time again. You're running out of things to say about him. He's that good. He's a stunning player. I don't think all round I've seen a better defender in my time watching Liverpool.
No, in watching anybody though? Watching anybody though, I'm going to throw that one up to you.
Watching best any team?
Any team.
Oof. No, there are, you know, people might get angry, but John Terry in his prime was absolutely brilliant, and Rio Ferdinand on his game was very good. So he'd certainly be up there.
Connell, there were other two Liverpool defenders who shone. They were the two fullbacks, not for the first time. Andy Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, both of them played a part in the two goals. I mean, I think somebody else wrote, I can't remember who it was basically talking about Andy Robertson saying he should really be considered for Player of the Year. But you never ever see left backs get considered for Player of the Year.
Yeah, and I also think if he wasn't playing in defence alongside Van Dijk, he would be in consideration for Player of the Year, because when you're playing next to someone of that extreme world-class quality, then, you know, your performances might get overlooked sometimes. And I think as well, for Liverpool fans, we've seen Robertson do it so, so much, just providing that outlet from defence, putting pinpoint balls in, constantly providing a threat down the left. And you don't take it for granted almost, but it's like you just kind of expect it from him. But whereas Van Dijk's positional play there in that thing, we haven't really seen exactly that from him. So you kind of, you take that as a bit of a difference to Robertson's, you know, 9 assists now. So yeah, but you can't get away from the fact of how much the right and left back for Liverpool, you know, those two positions that have been classically for ages considered as, you know, two of the easiest positions to play on the pitch, as two of Liverpool's most, you know, vital positions this year. They provided such a lot when perhaps the midfield haven't. And yeah, again, they did it against Tottenham.
Yeah, I mean, it was, the quality of that cross is just ridiculous, isn't it? Because it had been 15 minutes of absolute dour stuff, hadn't it, before that. And then it was almost like Andy Robertson had decided, right, enough's enough. I'm dragging this game out of the depths of mediocrity. And then, you know, for a striker, I mean, Firmino's movement was brilliant, getting him in between the centre halves. But you know, it was an absolute gift for him. He's done that so many times this season, and it's just been brilliant to see the development in Robertson. Because you think during those early weeks when he did get in the team, he delivered some great crosses, but quite often there was no one on the end of it, because I think he had this thing in his head, right, I'm in the team to get crosses in, so I'll just, whenever I get the chance, I'll whip it in. And his decision-making is so much better now, because I think over time, you know, that growing in stature and belief, now, you know, he picks the right time to deliver it. You know, he knows now that, you know, there's not much point in whipping in a decent cross if there's no one there to take advantage. And was that 9 Premier League assists for him this season? No Liverpool defender in the Premier League era has ever managed.
I think it was Stigging and Bjorn, if he had 8, I think it was.
Yeah, him. I think Baines is
and
the
11.
And Hinchcliffe.
And Hinchcliffe. Yeah. So, you know, he's got a good chance of beating
Both left backs, by the way. And so is Robertson. It's very strange, left-back that, isn't it?
But, I mean, you know, he must be fancying his chances of setting a new record there, because, you know, with 6 games to go, and he's so, so important to this Liverpool team. And you know, I thought him and Trent, absolutely, you know, when you think they were up against Rose and Trippier, two, you know, who people would regard as top class fullbacks in their own right, both of them absolutely, you know, won those battles hands down.
Joe, do you feel as though, I mean, personally, I think Andy Robertson, for a few weeks now before this game, I think the Fulham game as well, he's not quite been on his game. He had that dip for whatever reason. I mean, that's what happens. I mean, Trent's been the same, but both of them, they're going to have to be firing on all cylinders if Liverpool are going to get over the line and get a success either in the Champions League or the Premier League. But also, we've spoken about Robertson's assists. There was a block that he did on Eriksen. He's defending us. I think Trent in the first half as well, there was a few in the first 15 minutes when, as James said, Liverpool didn't start particularly well, but Trent got back and made, there was one header that he took from Dele Alli, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Great sliding tackle.
Yeah. But those are moments that kind of get overlooked a little bit, but they are primarily still defenders, aren't they?
Definitely. Look, I think Trent, a lot of talk about Robertson because he does catch the eye with his assists, and I think he's a fine fullback, but I think Trent is... he's one of the best young players in world football, and just because he plays in pretty much unfashionable position, the right back, if he was playing for any other club, if he was a Spanish lad playing for Real Madrid or a German lad playing for Bayern Munich,
it would be unusual.
You'd be looking at them going, what a young player, Germany building their team around him, Spain, and you'd be, you know, price-wise, you'd think, he'd be upwards 50, 60 million.
Trent, is that I think a lot of people are saying that, but I think the point I've just interrupted you, is how much would he actually be worth in the market now?
Exactly. You sort of take it for granted, don't you, that he's an academy product. He's just, like, he's unflappable, isn't he? You see him when he plays, he's so calm and got such quality on the ball. And then the quality of his deliveries is very, very good as well. You know, he technically gets an assist, doesn't he, for the winner, because it's his ball that finds Salah on the back post. So I think he's just an extraordinary young player, and Liverpool are blessed with two of the best fullbacks in the Premier League.
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned Salah then. Obviously, it was his header for the own goal at the end. But the way he celebrated it was, look, James, it was almost as though it was his goal, wasn't it?
But he tried to claim it on TV after.
But you saw,
you'd be claiming them. judge him.
But you saw his celebrations. They just seem to be different to what it normally is when he's... I don't know, it's a last-minute goal and they're all going to be happy. Yeah. But Salah himself, and then in that interview where he was speaking afterwards and he was saying, you know, I've scored 17 goals and there's some people who got on the same total as me who are meant to be having the best, you know, seasons of their entire career, which I think some people thought he was having to go at Sadio Mane, but it was based a bit more on Sterling and people like that who were on 17 goals.
Yeah, yeah.
But is this something that could then turn, you know, not turn his season around, but give him a little bit of a kickstart for the running? Because it's fair to say, you know, he has now gone 8 games without a goal.
Yeah, I think you're right. You could see, you know, how much it meant to him. And also what happened after with Lovren came on, didn't he, for the last couple of minutes of stoppage time. And obviously it meant that Salah got massive ovation, which I think was fueled slightly by the fact that I think a lot of people in the ground probably did think that he had scored the goal. Because I think George Sefton announced it as a Salah goal, didn't he? So, you know, but yeah, of course he'll take a massive lift from that. And again, you know, he's nowhere near the levels that we know he can perform at, but still making a contribution for the team. And he's right with what he said post-match. And we talked about it last week in the pod, didn't we? If this had been his first season for Liverpool, we'd be saying about what an amazing impact he'd had and what an absolutely quality addition. It's only because he's judged against, you know, the ridiculous record-breaking campaign he had last time around. But yeah, I don't, you know, again, I think, you know, that was another big positive to come from it. You could see, you could see how much it meant to him to play his part. You know, okay, the history books won't have his name attached to that winning goal, but you know, he played a big, big part in it.
Joe, is this an example of why Jurgen Klopp keeps Salah on the pitch? Because he's capable of doing things like that.
Yeah, he's a special player, isn't he? And you don't want to take him off if you need a goal. It's funny because last season, wasn't it, that he come up with an absolutely quality goal against Spurs late on, and obviously it didn't mean as much, did it? Why are you making a very strange face at me, Dolly?
Because I was yawning and I was trying to...
That's just his normal face.
I was trying to repel the yawn, as it were.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean,
why are you making a strange face? Oh, it's your normal face. Anyway, continue.
A huge contribution last year. Obviously, it didn't end up with 3 points with a late goal from Spurs, but, you know, he's done it in a completely different fashion this year. But, yeah, you don't take big players off in big games, I don't think.
Connor, are you in any way, shape or form worried about Mohamed Salah?
No, and I haven't been. I do think he has had his moments, you know, against the big teams where he's, you know, maybe not performed. And you can kind of see in his performances that he wants to do so much for the team. And that was clear from the celebration. You know, as James said, he's not going to go in the history books. It's not his goal. It's not going to go in his numbers. But he definitely feels like he's scored it, hasn't he? And essentially, he's made that goal. So, yeah, there's nothing to worry about. And with a player of his quality, you know, he's always got that ability just to change the game in the instant. And, yeah, as you said, that's exactly why he keeps him on the pitch.
James, you touched on it before. There's one worry, certainly, that came out of the game was the midfield. And before the game, I know there was a lot of people who basically were asking, why on earth is Fabinho not starting? And by the end, most people were asking, why on earth did Fabinho not start?
Yeah.
Because of the impact that he made. I know Jurgen Klopp praised it, but also said, look, he came on for the last 15 minutes against a tiring midfield. And Liverpool had, as you said, controlled the game to a certain extent for half an hour in the first half. But the second half, they were wide open, somewhat all over the place. They still remained a little bit open when Fabinho was on because, you know, they changed to the 4-2-4 or whatever it was by that point. But I asked a question in one of my pieces. Can Jurgen Klopp afford to rest Fabinho again for any game between now and the end of the season?
No, I don't think so. No, well, I think Fabinho's been Liverpool's best midfielder since the turn of the year, without a doubt. And I thought it was a strange decision. And I think, you know, that... But for the late goal, it would have been a much bigger talking point than it is, because
I still think it is a talking
not as
point.
Big though, is well, it? Just because Liverpool have won the game, I think Klopp would have got a lot of stick for his team selection if Liverpool draw that game, because but, you know, as it is, it's a sideshow, isn't it? Rather than like a real burning debate about it. But you know, it was it wasn't a massive shock in the fact that we've seen him go with that midfield three. And other, you know, it was the midfield three he picked in Munich, wasn't it? Only a few weeks back.
But then Henderson obviously then went off after 10 yeah. minutes, and then Fabinho comes on.
And he does like that, the solidity and experience that Henderson, Wijnaldum and Milner gives him. But I just think Fabinho was... I was really surprised he didn't pick Fabinho in the Allianz initially, and then the same...
Is it a worry the fact these tend to be big games that he seems to be missing out on? And then when he comes on, he makes a difference. Think of City away. And I know, once again, Jurgen Klopp said, well, the way the game had gone meant that he was obviously come on when we were getting beat, so on and so forth. But it doesn't necessarily mean that Liverpool would be getting beat if he started the game, does it?
No, and I'd be absolutely shocked if he did in that starting lineup at Southampton on Friday night, because I think Klopp, surely when he analyses that game, he'll realise that Liverpool badly missed what Fabinho gives you, because he's shown that he's not just a kind of a wrecking ball in midfield, that he is creative as well. He uses the ball intelligently. I think his positional play has improved a lot. So it was an odd one, the fact that you get the sense that there's maybe on Klopp's part a little bit of a nagging doubt in terms of trusting him in the real big games compared to what he knows he's going to get from Henderson and Milner, probably, because I think Wijnaldum starts regardless. I think he got that one wrong, and he almost, he got out of jail, really, in terms of it being the big talking point it would have been because of the late goal. I think, apart from the midfield, the other thing that worried me yesterday was Alisson Becker. I think I've not seen him look so dodgy in a Liverpool shirt this season.
Wasn't great at Fulham either, was he?
It was just odd. He just looked nervy from the start. I mean, there was... That one early on where he went to grab the ball, I think at Dele Alli's feet, didn't he, and spilled it, and Trent ended up having to hack it away. He got massively lucky with that long ball into the box from Danny Rose, where he ends up coming out. And if you see the replay again, it actually hits him in the head.
But I think he was giving Milner a call to leave it, and Milner just kept running at him.
But the fact is, when Alisson reached it, he was outside of his box anyway, so he couldn't have handled it.
I think he wants to head it.
He wanted to head it, and he didn't want to head Milner.
I think what he wants to do is come out, and he was telling Milner to leave it so he could head it clear, and then they had like a split second of confusion because Milner didn't slow up. So neither of them sort of went for the ball, hits him in the head and just bounces
and
back.
The Eriksen chance was obviously...
That's a really, really poor save to push it straight back out.
In the second half, I know he put one out of play in the second half as well, but I thought in the second half he did okay, in the sense of there was quite a few long balls came into the area and he went out and just went and got them. And I think this is something that Liverpool perhaps haven't had. In that sense, he alleviated some of the pressure, certainly towards the end.
Any great sense of... It was just completely out of keeping from what we've... I know he's made a few high-profile errors at different points of the season, but I've not seen him look quite so jittery over an entire game. And I think that contributed to the sense of unease around the place.
Going back to the midfield, though, Joe, you look at Liverpool's bench, there were Shaqiri, Lallana and Keita. None of those got on. And there's Oxlade-Chamberlain, we've spoken about him at length. It's not as though Liverpool don't have the options. Jurgen Klopp doesn't have the options to change things around in the engine room. Mm. But for some reason, as James has said, he's still sticking to that tried and trusted from 12 months ago.
I think with Fabinho, I think he worries about Fabinho when you've got a midfield that has runners in behind him. I think he's not the most mobile of players, Fabinho. And if you look at Tottenham and the way that they've got Eriksen and Ali, who likes to sort of buzz in around the 18-yard box, I think he worries with them too behind him. So even when Fabinho came on, I thought it's a little strange. People talk about the impact he had, and don't get me wrong, I think he's a good player, but Tottenham exposed Liverpool on the break a number of times and he was nowhere to be found. And I know, don't get me wrong, they changed formation, Liverpool, so there weren't as many men in midfield at that point, but that's what I think he worries about, and that's why I think he picks that workman-like midfield, and then he wants to get the ball wide to the fullbacks and they do the damage. But I wonder, you say Wijnaldum plays regardless. Wijnaldum, I think, has been poor in a couple of games recently.
He's lacked a little bit of energy, doesn't he?
Yeah. So I wonder why you wouldn't play perhaps Henderson and Fabinho, and you would make up for the lack of mobility Fabinho have with Henderson, and get Fabinho a little bit further forward on the ball. He is quite creative. His passing is very good. And I just wonder whether a break for Wijnaldum, who played over the international break, would do him some good. I find the makeup of the midfield slightly strange, but I can understand why he went for, say, Milner instead of Lallana or certainly Keita or Shaqiri. But Fabinho is the odd one. I don't understand why you can't get him in there, whether it's for Henderson or Wijnaldum.
Connor, do you feel as though there are more options that Jurgen Klopp should look at? Certainly looking at towards the Southampton game, whether it could be Keita who comes back in, because I know Joe just then mentioned playing Henderson and Fabinho together. I think it was at Wolves where Keita played as well, and they won 2-0, didn't they? That was on the Friday night. Yeah. So most of them have been shown to work to some level.
Yeah, obviously there's definitely options there, and Liverpool have some pretty decent players as options in that midfield. I think you always see pretty much the tried and trusted midfield in the big games, or considered to be the big games, Munich, Tottenham, etc. in recent weeks. But yeah, I think you've got to look to Southampton to perhaps give Wijnaldum a rest. I think you're absolutely right in that. I think, you know, playing 180 minutes for Holland, I think, you know, playing so much this season and not really missing any games, he needs that little bit of a break. Same as what Robertson did, essentially, when he had dental surgery and missing that first game of Scotland. I think that would have done him a world of good, actually. Just one game off, because if you know you're coming up to not playing, I guess you're going to have a slightly easier training period in that time as well. You're not going to be training as intense, and it just gives you a bit more of a mental rest as well. So I think there's definitely got to be an option looked at, but I think a Henderson and Fabinho midfield is a good idea.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Now, there was somebody else who came off the bench who made a difference towards the end of the game, and that was Divock Origi. Mm. I know you want to talk about him, don't you? Because this isn't the first time this has happened over the last couple of weeks.
There were cries in the office this morning from one season ticket holder of, give him the freedom of the city.
It's Paul Philbin.
but no, he... It provides you such a direct threat. And it's not, as you said in the office earlier, it's not fancy, it's not tricky, it's just, it's direct and it's, you know, attacking, and it puts teams on the back foot and it gives Liverpool something different. And I know, again, he comes on with a little bit when the game is maybe a little bit more tired, but he still is an incredible option off the bench, and it's a massive reason why Sturridge isn't even in the mix at the moment.
I was going to say, Jane, Sturridge didn't make the bench, did he? Which was interesting in that sense.
Yeah, but I think that's just a sign of the pecking order at the moment, and you know, the guys are right. Origi has been great, you know, since his dramatic intervention in the derby at Anfield. You know, he hasn't had a huge amount of opportunities, but I think what I like about him is he does always make an impression, whether it's only 2-3 minutes, 10-12 minutes, or whatever he gets given. I think Klopp knows exactly what he's going to get from him, and you know, Connor's right in terms of he is so positive and direct. You know, he will run at defenders, and he created the corner that led to the winning goal with exactly that, running at them, winning the corner, and then Tottenham only half cleared it.
Well, he'd won a succession of corners, didn't he? And that's kind of what helped put Liverpool back on the front foot, because he put the pressure back on Tottenham.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with Origi what happens beyond this summer, because it does feel like he's reaching a bit of a crossroads in his career, because you know he kind of knows that if he's going to stay at Liverpool, I mean, he's not going to be the main man. You know, Firmino is quite clearly going to still be the established number nine next season. So is he happy with this kind of like impact role off the bench and as backup, or as he reached that stage where he goes somewhere else and kicks on? I think, and obviously his contract situation, I think will be linked to that as well. I think he's only got a year left on his deal. So, you know, from Liverpool's perspective, you know, I'm sure they'll be looking to, you know, if he stays, they'll want him to sign a new contract, because I don't think they'll want to run the risk of losing him for nothing the following summer.
Origi, has he got a part to play then? A part to play?
Yeah. Massively, yeah.
How big a part to play then? Would you? I know he started against, was it Watford and Everton, scoring against Watford when Firmino was injured?
Played well against Fulham as well when he came on.
He did, yeah.
He's played well.
And he helped create a goal at Bayern Munich as well when he came off the bench. So he's actually doing something when coming. That's what you need, isn't it?
But he's Liverpool's most effective substitute, isn't he, right now? And especially since Shaqiri sort of disappeared. He comes on, it is just a simple threat, isn't it? But he goes and stands on the left, he picks the ball up, he never hides, always offers for it, and then just pins teams back.
He's got a lot of pace and power about him, and I think he's a little bit like your mate Emil Heskey, that he seems to be somebody who needs, you know, an arm round the shoulders, say like, come on. Because with Heskey, you could always tell from his first touch in the game how it was going to go. But with Origi, he hasn't got that option, because he's coming on a substitute and he has to be like, you know, bang on it from the off.
Yeah, and yesterday he was again. And he's a strange player, isn't he? And I feel a bit sorry for him. If he was 19 and he was coming on making an impact like this, you'd think, oh, give him some time, nurture him, and he'll improve. But what is he now, 25?
Yeah, he's got to be. And
not 25.
Is he not 25 yet? No, 24 then, something like that.
I mean, 23.
He's more than 23.
Yeah, he's 23 or 24. He was 19 when he played in the World Cup, wasn't he? That was four and a half years ago. So the most he can be is 24.
All right, so 24 then. But he's at a stage now where if you're Divock Origi, you've got to be looking at that in the summer and saying, right, I've got to go and move on, play regular football and keep developing. But, you know, he has periods where he looks a real player. You're all looking it up. How old is he?
He's 23. Thank you.
23, okay. He seems to have been around forever, doesn't he? But there you go. I think he should move on.
He's younger than Kevin Stewart.
His birthday is in a fortnight.
Is it?
Is it? Yeah. Getting a present?
Basically 24.
He's
23. Right, Joe. Yeah, he's 23. Right,
effectively
24. He's 23. He's in his 24th year.
I think he's an interesting player in the sense that we've spoken quite a bit about how Liverpool can go and sign a striker and tell them that they're perhaps not going to be the main player at the club. And you're thinking about the impact Origi's making right now, and you know, you'd be essentially looking for someone like that, maybe of a little bit more quality. Yeah. I think for Origi's personal career, it's probably best for him if he moves on, but who Liverpool then get in as that backup striker is a really interesting prospect, and it's going to be someone like Origi.
I just like his attitude as well.
Yeah,
because he's a lad, he was right down the pecking order, wasn't he? There was a time when he was behind Solanke last year.
Yeah,
and you know, he's had innings and he's had to work at it, and he never hear him going off on international duty and complaining. Even when he was away at Wolfsburg last year, he never complained or talked about his future. He just seems to have his head screwed on, comes back, works, and you know, if Liverpool win the title, then he'll have been a massive, massive part of it, and you know, he'll always have that winner against Everton as well. So you know, really do like his attitude, and I think he's played very well recently as well.
Can we talk a little bit about Tottenham before we wrap up?
Do you want to just get this off your chest?
No, I'm just saying that here's a team that 6 weeks ago were challenging for the title with Liverpool and Man City, and now suddenly Liverpool are, is it 18 points? Yeah, 18 points ahead of them. Now
they've lost 10 times.
Well, this was always going to happen with them, on it. The inability to draw games meant that they were always going to have a run. Squad depth is a massive thing, but how you see them there, and you know, if Tottenham had won, nobody could have complained. There's been quite a few games recently where they've lost at Southampton, certainly at Burnley, where they should have won at Burnley. And it's like, we've seen the likes of United, Arsenal and Chelsea come to Anfield. Tottenham were better than any of them, weren't they? Yet how are they in a battle for this fourth place with those three?
I mean, Lloris, that wasn't the first bad mistake that he's made.
Oh, he's terrible, yeah.
You know, I think he's been a bit of a liability for them in terms of costing them points. Just a bit of a strange side. I think we talked about it last week in terms of you never really know what you're going to get with Tottenham, because they can be absolutely brilliant to watch. You know, I think probably one of my favourite teams to watch, if you're sitting down to watch a game that doesn't involve Liverpool, I think that you know they can be absolutely... You know, they were brilliant in that second half yesterday. You know, they got some great players, but you know, when they don't kill teams off like that, they look so prone to making mistakes at the other end. And as we said, you know, they haven't got the squad depth. But you look at Liverpool's bench yesterday compared to theirs.
But then you look at it, and they brought on Son, so it can't be that bad, surely.
Yeah, but then you're bringing on Llorente, and it was, I don't know, I thought Pochettino's quotes were a bit odd yesterday, because you know, he was talking about them being heroes, wasn't he, and how it was just all bad luck. And he knows that
his team's got a lot of big games coming up, and he just needs to pick them up.
I know, but it's not. Yeah, I know managers don't always say what they think, but you just think, you know, if you were a Tottenham fan, you'd have been absolutely distraught after that, because
if I was a Tottenham fan, I'd have been distraught before the game and at all moments.
You know, and they have, you know, they're now in big trouble of not making the top four. And when you think about their £1 billion stadium and the bills to pay on that, that'll have major repercussions for them if they don't get back in the top four. All I would say is, when you see what they do, how well they can play, it certainly does give you hope. The fact they've still got to play City, because you know, if as long as the chances don't fall to Sissoko. then you wouldn't put it past them taking something off Guardiola's side.
Would you still back them to finish in the top four? Ooh, there's the question. I'm going to be asking you to use
I think they might miss out, actually.
Who's going in it?
I think Arsenal and United might get the other two places.
I think they will still. I think United will get the other place.
I think Tottenham will do it, and I think United are going to fall away. I think Arsenal will get in there. Because Arsenal were also quite good when they came to Anfield, even though they lost 5-1, which I know makes no sense whatsoever, but I thought in the first half, going forward, they're one of the best teams we've seen at Anfield. Connor?
I think Tottenham will get third, and I reckon if Chelsea sack Sarri quickly, then they might get fourth.
But we don't really? Want him to sack them, though, do we?
I just think that's what might happen. You didn't ask me what I want to happen.
True. Right, we'll finish then with Neil Warnock, the Cardiff manager, for whom Brexit does mean Brexit, judging by
that result does actually make that fourth spot more interesting for that Tottenham City game. So
you'd be mates with him, wouldn't you? Your Brexit head.
No, we've had this conversation before because I'm very much anti it.
Similar ages.
I'm very much. I've got more eyebrows. I'm very much anti it. But Joe, your insistence suggests that you, obviously coming from South Liverpool, suggests that you're more likely to be pro Brexit.
That makes absolutely no sense. Well, multicultural South Liverpool. Yeah.
Well, he's had
two chances to deny it, and he's not denied it. So we can only.
You are Brexit head. That is your nickname.
Brexiteer Joe Rimmer,
aka Fabinho 5.
Yes, Fabinho 5. You can't argue with that, which was correct. And we didn't see him for a while. Are we talking about this again? Why are we talking about this, Joe?
Because you're Brexit head.
You're pro Brexit. You're Nigel Farage's mate.
Neil Warnock. Do you know what? I think for the first time ever, I felt sorry for Neil Warnock yesterday. Because
really, don't you always feel sorry for
no,
Neil Warnock?
No, I don't like him, but.
it was outrageous.
The decisions that went against them in that
game.
It
was funny though, wasn't it?
The best one of the favourite images I've seen all season of him, hands on hips, just staring at the ref and the assistants. And someone was saying the protocol is obviously that the ref and the assistant are supposed to be the last ones to leave the field. So there was this like mad standoff with Warnock in the centre circle, just staring at them, not slagging them off or anything. I think you can say, I dislike Neil Warnock, so why would you feel sorry for him? But I feel sorry for Cardiff in general because it's just horrific. The first goal, the offside goal, the sending off with Rudiger, you only had to look at Rudiger's face to know.
Did you think that was a send off? Because I genuinely don't. I don't.
Oh my God, it's a nailed on red card. Two penalties they had for shirt pulling.
One of them was a penalty.
Awful referee. There's a few bad ones, but Paulson is right up there.
Do you not think there's a correlation between bad referees and how hard it is to referee a game? We talk about bad referees for years, and every season, every referee is a bad referee. Name me one that you think is a good referee.
Michael Oliver's decent.
Michael Oliver's decent.
So one referee you think's a good referee?
Roger Milford,
he was good.
He was from around your neck of the woods.
Perhaps it is just an impossible job, and we bang on... Cardiff banging off on about that decision. They scored an offside goal against Brighton the other week to win a game. And he wasn't bothered. What goes around comes around. You benefit from some...
But that's just the manager's... It was a massive succession. A massive succession of errors.
They were poor errors, but I think...
You really don't like Neil Warnock, do you?
I can't stand every manager hammering referees every week when we talk about them as if we've all refereed games. It's dead easy, and why can't they just get these right? It's not like Craig Pawson will be sitting at home now going, that penalty season I got spot on. That's absolutely spot on. There's no way that's...
He'd be sitting at home thinking, after the game, he went in and spoke to the officials or spoke to them wherever he spoke to them, and they were like gutted because they obviously see the replays as well and see they've got it wrong.
Exactly.
But then they just go on, whereas I'm going to get relegated.
I know, but they also have to deal with a lot of stick a lot of times. It's a horrible job. You'd never take it. You'd never want to do it, but we all dish out loads and loads of stick. Leave referees alone.
No. Well, who would you rather abuse, Neil Warnock or the referees? Make your choice.
Is there a lesser of two evils?
Ooh.
He's the biggest hypocrite in football, Warnock.
He's a football manager. What do you expect? They're all the same.
He is the worst for it, though.
To be honest, I think Neil Warnock, you know, he's an idiot.
that was a bad result for Liverpool, though, because...
Well, I'm going
to... You want Cardiff to... What you don't want is Cardiff to slip... away to the point where Burnley don't have anything to play for.
Liverpool have to go to Cardiff as well. Less safe with Chelsea winning that fourth spot.
I just think any result either way, because of the way the fixtures have gone, it doesn't really make any much difference.
There's two going to miss out on the top four, aren't there? So yeah. I don't know. I would have I would have liked to have seen Cardiff.
But then the thing is with Cardiff, the thing is with Cardiff is that it's kind of building up to when Liverpool go there, it could be the game that might relegate them. So that makes Liverpool's, it's always going to be a difficult game at Cardiff anyway. That makes it even more so, especially with Warnock. Although he quite likes Klopp, doesn't he? I think I seem to recall
he's like any odds, is it?
I think he quite likes him.
Spoke to him recently.
No, I'm just going off what he said to the press. Anyway, the reason I brought him up is because
Didn't he say that Bamba was better than Van Dijk earlier on in the season?
He then did change his mind and say, I might be wrong about that.
Yeah. He said he wasn't allowed to sign Van Dijk, was he, when he was at Palace? Because the Palace director of football told him Van Dijk was too slow. That's what he said as well.
And who was the Palace director of football?
I don't know, Ian.
Neither do I. No. That was very insightful.
More as we have it.
Lovely stuff. I haven't read it. Anyway, the point that brought Warnock up is that he repeated something that he'd said before the game, which was that, oh, you know, he's in a bit of a grump. And he says, oh, I may as well go and play my under-23s against Man City now. Yeah. So what are we to read into that? Is he just being a bit of an arse?
No, I think he'd probably do what Watford did something similar, didn't they? What was it, the week before their FA Cup tie, a few weeks back when they played City, he made six or seven changes, did he? Wouldn't it surprise me if Warnock did the same?
Has this become a problem for Liverpool then? Because Man City, it's clear that some teams are now just clearly, look at Fulham. Fulham were just awful against them.
Yeah, but it's
common sense just to give up.
Not to give up, but you know, he's not going to play the reserves.
He said it before the game as well, to be fair.
But he's not going to do that. But he will make changes. But I think he'd have made changes anyway, regardless of how they got on. Burnley is so big for them.
Does it not underline how difficult it is, though, for Liverpool? Because now it's obvious that some teams are looking at Manchester City and thinking, we probably haven't got a chance of winning, so we're not going to put our full team out. Whereas they don't seem to do this against Liverpool.
I don't know. I think all teams look at fixtures and prioritise certain games. I mean, you know, it's just the way it is. There's no point moaning about it. To be honest, I wouldn't
just say the opposite, for God's sake.
I just wouldn't accept. I would, even if Warnock said, I am going to play my strongest 11 at the Etihad on Wednesday night, does anyone seriously expect them to get anything there?
But they'd have more of a chance.
But I don't think it makes any difference. They'd lose anyway.
Did they play their relatively full strength team against Liverpool at Anfield? I think they did. Will they play their full strength team against Liverpool at
Completely different situation, different time of the season.
James and Neil Warnock apologist.
Exactly, Neil Warnock sympathiser. I asked the same question
Brexit
to you, Joe.
Means Brexit.
It's all coming out now, isn't it? So that's James and Joe on the side of Farage. Anyway, go on.
Don't you dare.
Yeah.
Don't you dare.
You started it.
But you are Brexit head. That's
but
your
I'm
nickname.
I'm not, though, am I? Quite clearly.
That wasn't my... I didn't
Joe, 52% Rimmer. What do you think of Neil Warnock in this sense, in his under-23s?
Oh, in that sense. Yeah. I think he's just... for want of a better word, trolling a little bit. He said it in his pre-match press conference, and he said, I might just play my reserves there. We'll see how the journalists like that. So I think he's just...
You there, James. You just stood up for him.
I think he's just on the wind-up, isn't he, really? But I think once he settles down, I think he will make changes. Of course he'll make changes, but, you know, like I still find he can't afford to throw a game, can he? I mean, they've got to fight for every point, especially... that Chelsea game going against them, they need to fight for a point. So, you know what? Fulham were absolutely crap, weren't they, at the weekend? But
did you just say crap?
You said arse before, so we're fine. Anyway, so they were crap at the weekend. But the two goals City scored were just like the most ridiculous errors that Fulham could possibly make. Yeah. So you never know. Cardiff could battle for something and get something. You know, no one expected Palace to do it. No one expected Leicester to do it. So they shouldn't give up. So come on, Cardiff, pick yourselves up. You can get a point.
Conor, do you believe there is an issue? I've said that perhaps some teams are not trying, but not putting their 100% resources into playing Manchester City, whereas they might do against Liverpool.
I don't think so. I just think...
asking this to everyone. Do you want me to go and see who's in the canteen, see if any of them will agree with you?
Psychologically, I think sides go into City thinking, we're not going to get anything. And you could see that from Fulham at the weekend. But I don't think they give up as such.
I never said give up, did I? They didn't. I know it was a bit different for them because they had a few players missing. But if Neil Warnock goes through with this like Watford did by not putting all their best players playing, that's what I'm talking about. Doesn't seem to happen against Liverpool is what I'm saying.
I don't know. I do think James is absolutely right. Teams look at fixture lists like you have to. Cardiff specifically now, like the coming up game, Man City, then Burnley. like, why wouldn't you rest a couple of decent players if you think you're going to get a result with Burnley? Like, it's, and if Liverpool were playing in that game against Cardiff on Wednesday, it would be the same thing.
But Liverpool did this once. Bloody Brendan Rodgers did it, and we saw what happened there. They lost both games, so it backfired.
It never tends to work out that well, does it? I mean, if Cardiff go and get beat 6-0 by City, for example, on Wednesday, that doesn't mean they're not going to go into the Burnley game thinking, great. That doesn't matter, let's go and have Burnley. They, you know, if they battle and get beat 2-1, I don't know. It is a very difficult decision. And,
big up the Cardiff 23s.
I think if you were looking at City's fixtures, no one with half a brain seriously thinks, out of all the games City has got left, that this is a game where they're going to slip up.
No, but that's not the point.
I think it is the point, really, because I don't think it matters what 11 Cardiff put out, they'll lose.
All right, then, I'll turn this around then. Could it actually be a positive if they come out and play the under-23s and City roll them over 6-0? Because then City will then go into their hard run of games, having had a ton of easy ones and perhaps been lulled into a false sense of security.
Or the 23s do something against them, and that'd be even better. Mm. We never know what can happen.
Yeah.
Well, it was a general point about City's games and the fact that they've had quite a few easy games. You look at the Champions League game was fairly straightforward. Their FA Cup run has been
fairly straightforward. Next weekend.
It's this weekend. Yeah, this weekend coming up. It's been fairly straightforward. Everything's been fairly straightforward, and then their difficult games are all coming one after the other throughout April. And it's whereas Liverpool they've found a lot of games a struggle. City haven't, but Liverpool are kind of in some way steeled.
Whereas City might not be. Yeah, I think there could be something in that.
Maybe you blew me on something.
If I agree with them on this, could that end the pod? I think you're absolutely spot on. I think there is something in that in terms of how battle hardened Liverpool had. And Liverpool have certainly won a lot more tight games and come through more real scares with their kind of heads held high than City have. And you're right, I think City suddenly arrived. Probably the first leg, I guess, of their Champions League game against Tottenham that will really kick things off for them. And then it's absolutely crazy, isn't it, for them. Then there's no way they are emerging from April completely unscathed because they've just got too many intensive games, that's why Sunday was so huge for Liverpool because. What it does is ensure that there is no leeway for City. They don't have that position that it looked like they were going to be in, where they almost had a free pass for one of those last seven they've got to play. As it is now, they've got to go flat out, and I don't see them winning all of them.
Right, I think that should do us. Join us later this week where we will look ahead to the game against Southampton on Friday night, which is always a great night to play football. Cheerio.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.